Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
It's The Amazing Show, featuring the amazing James Randi. For more information on all things Randi, including the Million Dollar Challenge, head to randi.org. Hey everybody, it's Justin Robert Young here, and if you have not heard part one of our Randi Happy Days episode, then go ahead to the website or on iTunes and pick it up, because here we go, part two, The Amazing Randi's Happy Days Adventure.
It was very interesting because the script developed as we walked through it, and they changed the set, and they didn't paint the floor until the very last minute, and that's an interesting piece in itself. Now, the set was very interesting because they could shoot the Cunningham living room,
yeah,
with the furniture, which all folded out at the back and such. They had movable walls on the set. An ingenious thing. I'd love to have a diagram of it. I'll bet the diagram exists someplace. But then they had the restaurant where they hung out.
Yep.
That was part of the set and such. And all they did in order to fold it out was they would just stop cameras, that's all, and you'd hear creaking and noise, and they'd fold it up, and there'd be a brand new set. And they'd just switch on the new set of stage lights,
yeah,
and that would illuminate it the proper way, you see.
Huh.
But all through that week, they were working hard at adjusting the lighting and setting the props up. And there were beds through one of the doorways that led to the restaurant, I remember, and in between scenes, or while somebody else was emoting out there, we would sit around, and I'd be talking with Henry or with Ron. Really fascinating guys. Fascinating guys. It turned out that Henry turned a little woo-woo later on. He did several programs. He produced several programs, directed several programs on paranormal subjects and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I guess I can forgive him for that. Last time I saw him was in Washington, D.C. I was walking down the street, and it was raining, and I had some friends with me. And in the window of a restaurant right on the main drag there, I saw Henry with his wife and his kid getting the kid out of snowshoes or something.
Okay.
And I saw him in there, and I said, watch this. Just stand here and watch. And I went around to the front of the restaurant, and I got by the maitre d' and said that I knew Henry Winkler, and he let me go by. And I just walked over to him, and I said, hey, you, get out of my milk can. Because the milk can was part of the,
part
of the routine. And Winker didn't even look around. He just said, Randi. And he turned around, and there we were. A short embrace, but he was working with the kid getting the snowshoes off.
Yeah.
So I didn't bother him much. But, no, very, very personable people, lovely people, very thoughtful. And when, let me just go back to the actual shooting. Anyway, we did it twice on the Saturday, once in the morning, once in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And there was much consternation in between shoots because they had to figure out what they might have gotten and might not have gotten and would have to shoot over again a couple of times.
Because then you have video playback with
exactly,
an option because they were shooting
exactly
on the film.
So anyway, that was their concern, not mine. And I did my piece relatively well, I guess. I did a vanishing radio and I did the milk can thing. Well, I didn't do the milk can thing. Henry ends up doing the milk can thing. But I don't want to give away the whole plot.
No.
Wait for Thanksgiving and watch the show again.
Only a few days till Thanksgiving.
But I guess you can see it on YouTube or see most of it on YouTube.
I believe, yeah, there is a pretty generous clips package that at least includes, I know, the beginning, the opening, setting up how you get involved in the plot. And then
right.
I believe you hang outside your hotel window
in
a straitjacket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, that's the interesting thing, too. Now, there was, this is Paramount, remember?
Yes.
They were used to doing film, not video, and not television programs. But they were originally designed for doing movies, feature films. And they got to a point where they had to discuss a levitation that I did with Marion. I'm sorry, Marion. I've forgotten your last name.
Isn't that
awful?
Yes.
Marion. Marion X. Yes. And Mrs. Cunningham, that is. And I had to levitate her, you see.
Okay.
And so I, Walter Kempe came out and said, where did we get a levitation? Now, hey, this is show business talk because everybody sort of in the business knows how these things are done. And I said, give me a prop man. So they introduced me to an aged prop gentleman, whose name I don't recall, I'm sorry. And he greeted me warmly and he said, what kind of a levy do you want? An Agra, an Azra? And I said, no, not Azra. And people are looking at me saying, wow, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
I said, no, an Aga will do. And he said, oh, we got three or four of them downstairs. He said, I'll get you a couple.
Yeah.
So he said, oh, by the way, he said, I worked with Tony Curtis on the Houdini movie, and we shot it right in this very same studio.
Oh, wow.
And he told me a few things about Curtis and Janet Leigh and various things like that. Mm-hmm. It was interesting little bits of show business gab.
Yeah.
We got along very well with the old prop man. Anyway, he got me what I wanted, and I just told him to make a few changes. We needed a little change in some welding on the thing to accommodate Marion, and just did a few adjustments, minor adjustments, but it worked just fine,
mm-hmm.
and a very simple thing, and it was all camera angles and such. But it was very interesting to see this old fella there who had worked at Paramount since he was a kid. He'd always been on that set, and he knew the set so well. But he made a bit of a boo-boo.
Oh.
Because the scene you speak about, when the kids go into the hotel room,
yes.
and they throw open the blind, they're going to dump some stuff out the window,
yeah.
And they see me hanging there in the straitjacket.
Yeah.
So when we were setting that up, the prop man was with me, the elderly fellow,
okay.
and I looked at the backdrop and I said, I don't know, I don't think so. That's not going to work right. So he asked me why, and I said, what's this backdrop called? And he looked at the back of it, and it says, Chicago, 1940s, sunlight.
Gotcha.
And, you know, these are standard
yeah.
Canvas backdrops that they just
yeah.
roll down, and there it is, just outside the window. And I looked up at the rig where they were going to hang me from, hanging by my feet.
Okay.
I had brought my special harness along to hold my feet. And I said, no, it's got to be much, much higher up. So they won't see that. And so they won't spoil anything. I would have been suspended from a spot just above the windowsill, you see, at the top of the windowsill.
Gotcha.
Top of the window frame, pardon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, no, that's wrong. I said, because I'm supposed to be hanging from a long rope from the roof. And he said, oh, yeah, because I would have swung like a pendulum, see, on a very short rope.
Yeah.
So what they did is they went up into the flies and they suspended it from way up in the flies so that when I oscillated back and forth,
there was
a much bigger swing, you see.
Yeah.
And it was also funny because I could, and one of the takes, it worked beautifully. And I don't know whether that's the take they used in the eventual job or not. But I would swing right out of the frame. And then as I came back in again, Fonz would shout something at me and then look out the window and see me go by. I think they used that take for
yeah.
some reason, really. But in any case, it was interesting because the old guy looked at me and he said, boy, you know your stuff. And I said, no, it's you that knows your stuff. He said, I may just tune it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he was very experienced, very, very knowledgeable, man, in every way. It was such a pleasure to meet an old-timer like that, knowing what he knew.
Yeah, especially just the history of just shooting magic stuff, everything else that I'm sure has gone through that studio.
And he told me a number of things that they did for the Houdini movie that they never used.
Really?
Yeah. That happens, of course, in all films.
I'll tell you what, did you see the thing, and this is kind of off topic, but Yahoo named the Houdini, Tony Curtis Houdini picture, as one of the top 10 most inaccurate biographies or biopics of all time.
Well, it was quite inaccurate.
Yeah.
In many respects.
Yeah, I
in
guess
many
they,
respects.
They cited in particular, I guess, the relationship between Bess and Houdini's mom.
Yeah,
and I guess
exactly.
they got his last name
exactly.
wrong. And, of course, he dies differently in real life.
Yeah, well, it's, they had to, that was George Pell, you see, who was the producer on that.
Okay.
And he had to mess it up because otherwise, if it was a fact, he didn't want it to show up.
Not show business.
That's show business. You got to
Life's
rewrite
boring,
the whole thing.
Kid.
Yeah, I don't care how he really died. this is the way he's going to die in flames, shot out of a cannon.
Yeah. I do like, I mean, they changed his last name from Weiss to, I forget, something else. But it's like another nondescript kind of Jewish name. Like,
Weiss?
Like,
really?
Yeah.
No, they changed his
name. Yeah, yeah. It was like I can't remember
Bloomberg.
Specifically, but it's like Schwartz. It's like it was like it's Weiss in real life. It's like Schwartz in the movie or something. Or,
I did never notice that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why you need to go to another different nondescript
really?
Jewish name.
Now, I was unaware of that. If that's so, I'm going to argue with you on that because I think I would certainly have remembered that. I know I was very uncomfortable watching the movie in the theater. Very uncomfortable.
Why is that?
Yeah, well, because it was so inaccurate.
Yeah.
It was really inaccurate. And somehow a guy with a Bronx accent doesn't sound like Houdini.
Houdini's voice was very high like this. He had a really nasty, unfortunate voice. I'm Harry Houdini.
Yeah.
There are recordings that...
Yeah. That it is kind of odd because he has like it's a very, very confident yet high-pitched voice.
Oh, yeah. No, he knew how to deliver all right. He knew how to get to the back row without using a microphone. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, the shooting of Happy Days was great because, first of all, I was playing myself. I was playing on in a very very rarefied atmosphere with all these stars and everything. I was impressed because everybody, with the exception of Mr. Cunningham, got along very, very well with him. And I'll tell you what happened at the close of it. It was very, very interesting. I had the big milk can. I had to struggle that back into its packing case, and I had to lock the lid down. I had to put the address labels on it. This is after we'd shot on Saturday night and was ready to go out on Sunday morning because they have to set up by Sunday night. They have to have another show set up. You see, to start on Monday. And so I was packing up everything and putting it away, and I took a couple hours to pack it up, and it was raining like cats and dogs outside. And so I stepped to the door, looked around. I had two suitcases in my hand. I had the other stuff labeled. It was going to be shipped to me. And I stepped outside, and there was a car with the windshield wipers going and the lights on. And the driver looked up and signaled to me, and it was Ron Howard.
Ah.
And he hopped out of his car, and he ran up the short set of steps there, and he got inside with me, and he said, I thought I'd wait around. I didn't want to rush you. I'd wait around so I could say goodbye formally, and it's been a great pleasure, and thank you so much for all your cooperation. This is a good episode, I think. Well, this is Ron Howard.
Yeah.
A big star, you know?
And yeah.
He didn't have to do that. He could have sent me a note. In the days before email, mind you, he could have called me, he could have sent me a note, but he waited for me in his car, waiting until I was thoroughly packed up and everything, and I was exiting. And I've never forgotten that.
Class act.
The class act, yes. Yes, that's exactly the word.
Now, and obviously, you know, the cast has gone on to do, many varied things, of course. Ron Howard probably being at the top of that list, considering I guess at the point that you knew him, he was a huge star because he'd been on two gigantic television shows, by the time he was
old, he was. Can you imagine? As a little kid.
Yeah, but, you know, afterward, obviously, as a storied kind of directorial career, did you get the sense? I mean, obviously, he was a very, very nice guy, but his ambition that stretched beyond just doing the acting.
Well, we did get a chance to talk about it.
Uh-huh.
And he used the old Hollywood line on me. But, you know, I've always wanted to direct.
Yeah.
but he did want to, and he did.
Yeah,
and
it has.
Wonderful job of it. My goodness, what a talent. Of course, you know, as a little kid 3 feet high, he was exposed to the greatest directors. You know, Gary Marshall was a director on this particular show, for example.
Yeah.
And just astonishing. He was exposed to all of that, and he learned from every bit of it. Oh, I got to tell you a funny line, too. Now, you see, I'm doing the name thing again. I can't remember the name of the on-set director. He was a... Oh, I'm going to hate myself because I know the minute I leave this microphone, it'll occur to me. He was a well-known comic who was now working for the show, and we did a read through on the first day on the morning, Monday morning. We did the read through from the white script, and he put his foot up on a bike. You got to imagine backstage now. The prop men are running all over the place doing the whole thing. I got to tell you about painting the floor too. Don't let me forget about that. So we've got the whole cast with our scripts in our hands. We've been making notes on them with pens and as we went along. And this fellow, I wish I could think of his name. He's deceased now, unfortunately. But he had a secretary there, and he has one foot up on a packing case of some kind, and he's looking at the secretary, and he says to her, he says, "Take notes." And she looks at him. She says, "What else?" You know, they do this every week.
Yeah.
And he says, "Okay, make a note there. The cast this week is in good shape. Everything seems to be really falling into place. Randy's going to work out just fine. As for Winkler, make a note. Put down, And everybody laughed, of course.
Yeah.
And Winkler bristled. It's such a funny line. This guy's a comic, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't giving up his trade, obviously.
Yeah, just got to break it.
For Winkler, put down, eh. And they went on. But they really consulted with me. They wanted to know that I was comfortable with the lines.
Huh.
They wanted to know that that this would be the right line to use at this particular place. And we still had some action to develop, like the vanishing radio to conclude the thing.
Yeah.
As a little bit of a sign-off. We hadn't decided on what was going to happen there yet. And the script was only very rough. The script changed. About two-thirds of the script really changed before we got to shoot it.
Huh.
But that was an interesting development, to see the whole thing develop over the week. What would have been really cool would be to watch three of these shows, three consecutive shows, take place and see the changes that were made, because the changes are considerable. It develops, it grows, it literally grows from a seed early Monday morning all the way through till Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And it was very, very interesting to see. And the uptights that we saw there, you know, it took a lot of really good, heavy, professional work. People had to know what they were doing. There was no room there for slackers or people that were a little doubtful about what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And you could really argue that at that point, there was only a decline in terms of how big and how influential TV was as
yeah.
networks expanded to cable,
mm-hmm,
to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that may have been, you know, some of the last days where, you know, you wouldn't blink an eye at shooting an entire sitcom
right.
on film with
right.
all these sets and
right.
this entire infrastructure that went into it. So
now,
it's a
let
very...
me tell you about the painting the floor.
Now let's go. Painting the floor. Why do they paint the floor last?
Well, they painted it last just while the audience for the first taping was coming, filming, pardon me,
yes.
was coming in. Now it was very fast drying paint.
Yes.
But up until then, they had marks all along the floor in different colors for the different cameras.
Oh.
And there were cue numbers on them and such. And so the director got out there, and not with a megaphone. He had a microphone.
Okay.
And he told the cameraman, he said, okay, mark your spots, gentlemen. We're going to paint. And the cameraman all mulled around and saw the paths that their camera was going to take. They were on dollies, that is, little carts
yeah.
With
yeah.
soft tires, of course. And they had a dolly man there to move them around.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been very carefully rehearsed and gone through many, many, many times. So they knew exactly where they were supposed to be in any given spot in the script. And he said, okay, these marks are going to disappear. And they started to paint. And they had a spray gun out there, and psh, they sprayed the whole thing. And then they went along with the brushes, and they painted in various things. They laid down the carpet
yeah.
that they would. Very, very, very thin carpet that looked thicker but was very, very thin so the cameras could pass over it without bumping, you see.
Yeah.
And it was lovely to see because it was so professional. I know I've said that word a lot of times here.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. It was really pro. These people all knew what they were doing. They worked like clockwork. It was a team effort. And nobody failed. Nobody. You couldn't fail. If you failed on a thing like this, you were canned.
You're done.
You're out. Yeah. And get somebody in to replace them. Now.
Yeah.
And somebody would walk through the door. And,
so a well-oiled machine.
Oh,
these
yeah,
guys
yeah,
knew
yeah,
exactly
yeah.
what they were doing.
No exceptions. No,
yeah.
Nobody could fail. And, the pressure. Pressure on me, you see. I'd never done this before.
Yeah, you were just kind of brought into this circus.
Yeah, and the pressure. But they were very good to me. They were considerate. They knew that I was a neophyte when it came to doing something like this. And they were really good to me.
Mm-hmm.
They went out of their way to make sure that I was at ease and that I liked everything that was happening. And I couldn't have got along better. I just couldn't have.
That's incredible. All right, now the one postscript that I'm sure people are going to want to know. You mentioned that you had a fast friendship with Ron Howard while you were shooting, that you guys got along really well. Have you talked to him since?
I have not. And,
okay.
I would like to have him for a TAM. You know that?
Yeah, that'd
because
be huge.
He's had such wide experience in the field, in the entertainment field and such. And he's got, some of the stories he told me.
Oh, man.
Alone. I mean, just wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff. I have not been in touch with Ron. A little hard for me to reach. It's like...
It's kind of a big guy.
yes, it's like House now. Well, now, look at Hugh Laurie, who is now House on television and so well-known. And Stephen Fry, his partner in England for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to, when I did my series in England there on psychic investigations and whatnot, that was a good experience for me too, until one day they announced that the two guests sitting in the front row would be these two.
Ah.
And they sat side by side, but they came in advance to the audience, and the audience only saw them from behind, you see.
So they
didn't recognize them.
Yeah.
And they were careful to be engrossed in books and looking at books and not talking together. And so then they fooled a couple of the so-called psychics there who gave readings for them.
Really?
It was so wrong. So wrong.
Yeah.
Just incredibly wrong. So I got to know Hugh Laurie and Stephen very, very well. And I must say, I'm trying to reach Hugh Laurie now. I don't know how the heck to get in touch with him. All my friends in show business in Hollywood say, oh, boy, that's hard to do. That's really hard to do. And they can give you the names of the agents and such, but that's useless. Totally useless. Because the agents don't pay any attention to this at all. They want to know, are you going to book them? How much are you going to pay them? That's all they want to know.
Yeah. You know?
And all I want to do is I want to get in touch with them. If I had
just want to say hello.
I would like to, next time I'm in Los Angeles, to spend half an hour with Hugh Laurie.
Yeah.
He's such a huge success. And
indeed.
Great actor. What a great series this is for him.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yep. I mean, it couldn't be a bigger hit.
Yep. Oh, and incidentally, Stephen Fry's got his series going, too. I don't know whether you'd heard about it. It's called Kingdom. Now, House and Kingdom. Isn't that interesting?
There we go.
The names of the series, the two series that the guys are doing.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to guest on one another's shows, but it doesn't
definitely kind of a different...
His kingdom is a lawyer.
Ah.
That's what Stephen Fry is a hell of a good actor.
He's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Well, both of them. They're really fine actors, aside from being a comedy team. They're pretty fine actors.
And it's really funny because nobody really, I mean, there's a very small subsection of people who pay attention to British television here that even know that they were, a comedy team.
Well, I had an interesting episode. We were staying at the Holiday Inn in Manchester when we shot the series for Granada, my TV series there, years ago. And they stayed overnight and were heading out the next morning. But there was a fire alarm in the hotel. That emptied the entire hotel out. The alarms went off, and on the speaker, and young plane, abandon the hotel, in an English accent. And so we all poured out in the streets, and we ran into one another dressed in Holiday Inn robes.
PJs
robes. And we ended up doing a little review show for the rest of the hotel.
Really?
Standing out in the street, yeah.
The confused, huddled masses outside the...
I was doing a little bit of sleight of hand stuff, and they were doing a little buck and wing thing, and it was sort of fun, and we retired, and there was no fire. It was a false alarm altogether, but we're all out on the street, and that audience from the Holiday Inn there emptied out into the street like that. Didn't think they were going to get a
good crowd.
Good audience, but the price was right.
Exactly, and completely unexpected.
So, Hugh Laurie, if you're out there, I want to hear from you, Hugh.
Yeah.
I'd really like to hear from you. I've got a lot of things to tell you, and some interesting stuff about some interesting people.
Very
With medical conditions you wouldn't even dream of.
Ah, there we go. Some interesting teases. All right, well, yeah, everybody, I'll tell you what, we don't have near the reach that, let's say, your Swift column does, but, I mean, for the mere couple thousand that listen to this show, if we can get Randy in touch with either Ron Howard or Hugh Laurie, that would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and, you'd think it'd be a relatively easy job, but it's not, because it has to go through so many filters.
Everybody's
so many
very busy. I mean, and you know this, that, I mean, the more busy you get, the more you have to kind of put barriers.
You've got to put barriers.
Because you got to continue to produce, because that's the reason why people want to talk to you to begin with.
Well, the fellow's on his way over here right now, as a matter of fact, from Orlando, who was amazed that he got me on the telephone. He said, this is you in person? Oh, and he was all speechless, the whole thing. He didn't understand that I work 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Most of the days right here in the foundation. But he was astonished that he actually got me in person. But
I guess people just assume you work in the Randy Kingdom and
the
Randy Gates out front.
I'm a little more reachable than most of these other folks, I can assure you. Anyway, thank you, Justin, and happy days to you.
Questions, comments, topic suggestions? Email randy@itricks.com.
itricks.com.